is Gideon Rothstein. Welcome to A Responsive Day for the 25th of Shivat. The tshuva that was written on the 25th of Shivat of Tov Shin Nun Vav of 1996, sorry, when the Tzitz Eliezer was over 80, was a response to a question. This is in Tzitz Eliezer Chilek Chaf Bet, the 22nd Rhyme Siman Nun Hey, but we're actually going to spend most of our time in an earlier response, we'll get to it, where he had dealt with these issues at length. The question in 1996 that was raised by a doctor in Israel who consulted with him on many of these issues, wanted to know about the halachas of these things, was, you have a woman who's pregnant, and the way they created the pregnancy, it's like a test tube baby. They take an egg from her, and they take sperm from her husband. They fertilize it outside the body, and then they insert it into her womb, into her uterus, and she has a baby, and she eventually has a pregnancy and a baby. So the question is it chayav in pidyon haben, meaning this is her first child, does she have to do a pidyon haben in these things? So the man writing this question to this says, I don't think there's any real halachic questions here, because he says the Gemara says that in terms of pidyon haben, when it comes to a cesarean section, you don't have a cesarean section, because the Gemara says the rule is that you need the woman to give birth the way that she became pregnant, right? Mederech shehi mazara. So in the Gemara's time, that means if a husband and wife have relations with each other, and then you eventually take the baby out through this, you know, through an operation through the stomach in a cesarean section, the baby didn't come out the way it went in. But in our situation, it's the reverse problem. The baby didn't go in that way. So even if she has a natural delivery, she has a vaginal delivery, she's not giving birth the way that she became pregnant. So he thought that would suggest that you don't need a pidyon haben. And he knows of another halachic situation where you have a similar kind of a problem. Let's say a woman has what's called a tubular pregnancy, which is actually very dangerous, so which is where she becomes pregnant and the baby never gets into the uterus, and the baby starts to develop in one of the fallopian tubes, right? So that pregnancy can be dangerous. So let's say they take out the baby in that situation. That baby doesn't survive. There's unfortunately and sadly no way to save such children, such babies. But when they take it out, when she has a baby the next time, the halacha is that she is considered to be, it's her first time having a baby, and therefore you'd have a pidyon haben because the first one is not considered a vlad at all. So, but this is similar, he says, because there was no such previous thing, and this is a baby that's put in, therefore he thinks that there shouldn't be a pidyon haben. That's the question. Now, frequently when you ask these questions, you assume things that aren't necessarily true. So as Tzitzeliezer says, I've dealt with a lot of these issues before, and we're going to see some of them in our continuation. But he says there's particularly a problem in terms of lineage. So those lineage issues meant to the Tzitzeliezer that you should do a pidyon haben, because he thinks you should do pidyon haben because he doesn't think the whole issue of where it went in and out is relevant here. But he thinks you should do it without a bracha. And the reason you should do it without a bracha is because he thinks it's not clear that this baby is related to this mother. We'll get to that in a second. I mean, uvchar gam yaseh abidyon b'shlichut beitin, and also have a beitin do it rather than the father, because he's not sure if the father counts as the father of the baby because of the issues of when the Tzitzeliezer is going to hold that when a baby is conceived outside the womb in a test tube, it's not clear who the father counts as for halachic purposes, and therefore he thinks you shouldn't do it. And then he points us to a sefer called Ot Chaim V'Shalom by the Gaon Mimunkach, who spoke about the fact that once when he was in Berlin, he heard that a certain Rav had said that if you have a woman who, Mimunkach Rebbe had said, this Gaon Mimunkach said he was in Berlin, he heard there was a certain Rav who said that if there was a woman who was having trouble giving birth on Shabbos, and so the doctors took the baby out with like forceps, with like instruments, he said, oh, you can't do a bris on Shabbos because that's considered yotzei dofen, and therefore that's considered like, we would call it a cesarean section, she'eino nimol b'Shabbat, that is not, we don't do a milah on Shabbat, meaning brit milah on Shabbat is only for a baby that was born on Shabbat and only a baby that was born vaginally, that was born in the ordinary way. So this baby was not born the ordinary way, said this rabbi, therefore you don't do a brit milah on Shabbos. And the Gaon Mimunkach had said, the Rav from Mimunkach said he thinks that's all crazy because that it came out the way of, through the mother's ordinary way of coming out. So therefore, it's not considered a cesarean section, and that's only if they open up her stomach. So because of all of that, And the pasuk in the Torah says also peter rechem, right? Somebody who's released, a baby that comes out through the rechem, through the mother's womb, and has the ordinary delivery. So here too, even though the baby was conceived in a test tube, it came out that way, and therefore the titulars thinks that you do have a pidyon haben, but he's not sure who the father is, right? So he says he's proved elsewhere in Titzeliezer, which we're not going to get to, but proved elsewhere in Titzeliezer that halachically, if you have a baby like this, if you take the egg from the mother and then create the baby and then implant it in a woman, whoever the woman is who the baby's implanted in and who then gives birth to that baby, that's the mother of the baby halachically, right? We're going to see this a couple of times in this tshuva that Sicily Ezra does not think the issue of genetic material is what's the most relevant in terms of establishing lineage. And in his opinion, establishing lineage is done in terms of the mother-son relationship, by who gave birth to the baby. That would be very important halachically in terms of what people think of today, because people today very much assume that it's a question of genetic material and who's got genetically related, biologically related, and that is not true according to the Sicily Ezra as a halachic matter. The issue only is the father's relationship, and there he doesn't go to it at length, but he thinks there's problems and there's issues there, because after all, again, it's not a baby that was produced by the father having relations with the mother in an ordinary way, and once that doesn't happen, he thinks that relationships halachically are not so clear. Then he throws in a postscript, but we have a lot more to do on our own issue, but the postscript is not about... It's about this. He talks about, all right, very briefly, he talks about, you know, we have a halacha in halacha, if a woman gives birth to children, this is in a time... Certainly the halacha came about in the Gemara's time when medicine was not the same way it is today. If you had sadly young little babies who might bleed out after a beat milah, they couldn't stop the bleeding. We usually today assume it's a question of hemophilia, but it doesn't always have to be. And the reason I bring that up is because he says, what happens if you have a third child, but the first child was a boy and died because of the beat milah, because bleeding out, and then the second was a girl, and she also sadly died. She got cut, not a brit milah, not a circumcision. She got cut and she bled out and passed away. Is that enough to say you don't have the baby, the third child, have a brit milah until the baby gets older and you know about it? And he found a D. Ray Makil who said, yes, you wait, because that's good enough. Having a boy and a girl is also good enough to establish that this is a family where the babies tend to have bleeding problems, and therefore you would not have a brit milah until we could have some confidence that it could happen without creating any danger for the baby. But that's not really our issue. So our issue, though, this question of which started with a pidyon haben for a test tube baby then implanted in the mother, that really goes back to other issues about test tube babies in general. Sicily has very significant and strong opinions about it. Now, ordinarily, I think people think of the Sicily Ezra as having been very or relatively progressive. I think he's very well known for some tshuvot he has about abortion, that people who want to be makil, who like leniencies, who like when the Torah allows things that the world in general thinks should be allowed, so they see this as a good thing. But there are times when he was conservative, and with a small c, where he felt that the halacha does not accept certain things that are going on in the broader world, and this, the issue of artificial insemination plus the issue of test tube babies was one that caught his attention. So on the 8th of Elul of Tafshin Mem Aleph, 1981, he was written a letter. This is the one by the doctor, by Rabbi Professor Dr. Meir, who was the general manager of Shari Tzedek, the medical director of Shari Tzedek, and he had many correspondence with the Sicily Ezer. So in 1981, he writes to the Sicily Ezer about an issue that comes up, and he lays out the medical side of it, that there are times when a woman will have some problem conceiving. So if her tubes have a blockage, either at the opening or in the middle, and it could be because she had an infection there, it could be other reasons, but you can have times when women can't get pregnant because of that. So there are doctors who are in the process in the early 80s of discovering that you can take the whole procedure, as we saw later in 1996, it's already well assumed, you can take the procedure outside of her body, and you can do it in a test tube, and then after you create conception and fertilization of the egg with the sperm, it then grows into like a small little baby. I think they call it a blastocyst, a small embryo, whatever. Then you can implant it in the mother, and whoever the woman is going to carry its term. Today, they often implant things in surrogate mothers, right? That's what the word in the general language is for these women, in surrogate mothers. So, and you implant it in the place, and this might be relevant, you implant it in the place where a natural pregnancy would have occurred, and then You do it. So it's been 3 years. By 1981, it's been 3 years that these things are being done at places all over the world. And there are now, by this time in 1981, about a half a dozen children who have been born in this way. And the health ministry in Israel has established that, because if once you there's a technique out there in the world, then you can do it. They've established that they are willing, if it's shown that they can work, and there's no other way for a woman to get pregnant, they're willing to subsidize it or pay for it, right? In Israel, medicine is socialized. So if you want to have a procedure, the government has to agree that it's a valid medical procedure. So they said you can do it, but they can only do it once people have shown that there's really no other way for them to get it. And then the government at the time said, today it's a whole different story, but at the time they said they would only do it with a married couple. And so this Rabbi Dr. Meir, who's a very good guy, I've seen him in other tshuvot, and the tzitzit likes a lot, he says, I don't even have any halachic problem here. I was just writing to find out your opinion about this. So on the 7th of Aseret Yemei Tshuva, I mean the 7th of Tishrei, but he writes it as the 7th of Aseret Yemei Tshuva of Tavshin Membet of 1980, also it's 81 still, it's like a, it's like a couple of weeks later. I will point out that this is just a notice to me. If I'm finding tshuvot based on their date and I'm searching in my Bar Ilan for specific dates, I would never have caught a tshuva like this because he doesn't call it Zayin Tishrei. He calls it Zayin Da'aseret Yemei Tshuva, and I wouldn't have thought to look for that. In any case, he says, I've been thinking about this and I looked into it, and I think that, you know, this whole idea, it does have halachic problems to it, direct ones, and also ones that come about along the way, and we have to think a lot about this issue. And he's going to lay out some of the problems that he has with the idea of a little bit of artificial insemination, but even more so of test tube babies. So, and some of them have come to fruition, some of his worries have come to fruition, so really it raises a lot of questions, not only about this specific halachic issue, but will raise a lot of questions about how much do we worry about the consequences of an action, about where it's going to go, and how much do we trust people, and how able are we when we see a danger looming to say, therefore, we shouldn't take this first halachic step. That is a halachic claim that I think a lot of people today might have problems with, but that's what this is just going to point out a lot here. So first he says, let's talk about artificial insemination. Artificial insemination is where, for whatever reason, the husband can't impregnate his wife naturally. So what they do is they take the husband's sperm and then they implant it into the wife. So sometimes it could be that they might take, you know, I think some of the problems are there's not enough material, for whatever reason that it is, not enough general genetic material comes out in the sperm when the husband produces it naturally in the ordinary way of marital relations. So if you take a couple of examples of that from him and you put them together and you mix them up together, it makes it more potent. And then you can also, it could be that it also, he doesn't send it with enough power for it to reach and fertilize the egg, so if they inseminate it, then it makes it more powerful and more able to do so. So, he says, when it comes to that question, which it's not a question of whether you're allowed to do it, that one you're pretty much allowed to do. There are some questions that come up, but pretty much you're allowed to do it. But there are those who say that it's not allowed, for reasons we'll get to in a little bit. There are those who say that it's allowed, but they have some conditions, and there are those who say it's completely allowed. So, his view is that for as long as there's any hope that they can have a baby naturally, they should try everything they can to do it that way, because he's very against this whole idea. This is not a halakha claim as much. He's bothered by the interfering of people into this process, and therefore he wants to find all sorts of ways. If they can find it naturally, they should do it naturally. So the amount of time that he thinks he should wait, he says, if 10 years have passed, or it's been clear medically that by doctors that we trust, that they're not going to be able to give birth. Now, that 10 years is an important comment to me because it points out to me and reminds us that there are times when halachically we have to have people wait for things, even though it's very painful for them, even though it's difficult for them, it has consequences for them. Sometimes we don't have any choices. And this comes up in other areas as well, but it's something that we don't always, I think about as much as we could. That sometimes that's the way life goes, and you can't always do everything. It's not always possible to do what you need to do to try to help people, even as much as we'd like to help them. In any case, once we determine that she, in fact, will not be able to have children, the way they're going now. Yesh nam hamatirim. There are those who allow only when she's not a nidak. In other words, if we're doing artificial insemination is we're going to take the material from the husband and insert it into the wife, right? It's very similar to what would happen naturally. So therefore, maybe you say it's similar enough to what would happen naturally that when she's a nidah and halakhically they're not allowed to have marital relations, so too they wouldn't be allowed to do this. So if that's true, even those people that would say that there's a time when a couple is not allowed to have relations. It's called samuk levesta, when she has to expect, when they have to expect, they'd have to expect that she may become a nidah, they're required not to have relations. So in this case, if they're not having relations, that would be okay. But if she's actually a nidah, if she's actually in that time of the month when she has menstruated and she has to wait after that 7 days at a Torah level, then there are those who hold they couldn't do artificial insemination then, even though there's no specific contact between the husband and the wife, actual physical contact. There are those who say that while that's true, there are those who accept that, but would say that once those 7 days are up, so then there's halakhically what's called the Yimei Libuna. We today treat all such women not only as nidot, but as a vote. Therefore, not only is there the time when she's actually menstruating, but she has to wait for 7 days where she sees no blood whatsoever. So during that time, if she goes to mikvah, after the 7 days are up at a Torah level, so she's no longer at a Torah level a nidah, that doesn't mean it's okay for them to have relations, but there are those who held that since she's no longer nidah d'oraita, and there's not going to be any physical contact between the husband and the wife, that then you could inseminate her with the material, and then some say that even when she's nidah, you can do it. So whenever it is you're allowed to do it, says it's today. So you have to be very careful that they don't mix the material from the husband with other material. Meaning it seems like the doctors would put in other material, I think just to strengthen it or fill it up more, if that was the problem there. So from the doctor's perspective, they're creating a pregnancy, and who cares whether the material gets mixed up. But this says you can't do that because he's going to say, you're not allowed to take another man's material and put it into this woman because that's pretty much the same thing as adultery. It's not adultery in the physical act, but it's adultery in terms of the baby that's produced, the baby that would have been produced from material, not from her husband, and that is not allowed. Therefore, you can't do this. So, even in situations when you're going to do a test tube baby, he says, all of these things he thinks are exactly there as well. Now, that's an interesting claim because I could have imagined saying, in artificial insemination, it's close enough to an act of marital relations between the husband and the wife, that therefore you have all these limitations on it, right? Or according to the various opinions. But I might have thought if it's a completely medical procedure where they're implanting a created fetus, right, an already conceived embryo, I could imagine saying that the issues of whether she's a nidah or not don't matter as much. But that's not what Tzitzileza says. Tzitzileza thinks the same issues apply. And then he throws in, and this is where I think we get to some of the central issues with Tzitzileza. He says, by the way, I was stunned that you wrote that in the health ministry, they don't mind taking another man's semen, right? Another man's genetic material in cases where the husband is actually sterile. The husband really can't produce children, so artificial insemination wouldn't work with his material. So the Misrad HaBriyut, the health ministry at the time, was willing to use other men's material. So the rabbi who was writing, the doctor, the professor, the rabbi, professor, doctor, who was writing to Tzitzileza said, in this case, we wouldn't be doing that. But Tzitzileza says, but you got to pause and notice that they would be willing to do that because that's going to affect his whole perception of that. Meaning that means to him, it reminds him that these are people who don't care about the halakhic issues involved, and that will change all sorts of things. And sometimes they did it with the couple knowing about it, and then sometimes they didn't do it, they did it without them knowing about it, which is stunning. Right, that to me is stunning too, that the Misrad HaBriyut, the health ministry, would allow doctors to substitute other men's semen for the husband if the husband is infertile, and sometimes they do it without telling the husband. They tell the wife, the woman, but not the man, because they don't want him to know that his material is not being used, that he's infertile, and they'll even mislead him about it. Again, that's a stunning thing. Right, so the Tzitzileza says you're operating in a situation that so threatens family lineage, which is an important part of our halakhic perspective of children and families, how it works. And if that's true, he says, then that supports those who didn't ever want to allow this at all, because you see that we're dealing with people who would do all these wrong things. And if you allow the first step, they'll do the other steps. They'll say, well, this is not such a big deal to go beyond it. But it really is a big deal to go beyond it. And they don't see that big deal. So that is, and so these other people would say the whole thing is usur, and they wouldn't give the real reasons for it. And the reason they wouldn't give the reasons is they didn't want other people saying, well, I hear your reasons and I disagree. That's a general halakha question that comes up in lots of situations. And here's one good example of it. So they're just saying, we have this halakha concern. The people we're dealing with don't have this halakha concern. If we tell them we're prohibiting this because of that halakha concern, they won't care because they don't have that halakha concern. And therefore, we're just going to tell them it's prohibited and not tell them why. And then he points out the Divrei Malkiel, who I mentioned briefly before, earlier, who I would say now is Rabbi Malkiel Tenenbaum. I found them online. He was the Rav in Lomża, I think it's in Poland, from 1847 to 1910, who said that if we allow certain things, we have to worry that you're going to lead to other things, and we're going to let those who don't care about halakha do what they want. Therefore, it's part of the job of a posig to see ahead of time that this is a problem. So this is going to apply that here and say, so when it comes to test tube babies, you're going to tell me it's a test tube baby where you have And the Chazonish says something very similar as well. Chazonish also said there's no way to be matirit because, I'm sorry, I think I caught myself in the middle of a sentence, because in this situation, it's okay, it's a husband and a wife, but we are dealing with people who will do all sorts of other things. Now, he doesn't bring it up, but nowadays, you have women, Orthodox women, who are allowing themselves to get pregnant and finding ways to get pregnant. They don't know who the donor father is, or they do, or I don't know, but they're doing it as single mothers. So when the question first came up, the Mishrat HaBriut was saying that they weren't going to be willing to do it with unmarried couples. Now they do. So this is all these kinds of things. You have lots of areas, especially in the area of marriage and sexuality, and lots of examples where people start one step. They say, oh, no, we're only asking for this. And then once this happens, whatever that may be, and I'm leaving out examples on purpose, it goes on and on and on. So here, that's what's coming up here as well. And then you have problems later on down the road. So he, Tzitzit Eliezer, also is very much against this idea of putting the genetic material of another man in a married woman and even in a single woman, because it's, first of all, the toeva itself, that people are just getting pregnant all over the place. Pregnancy is supposed to happen within the context of marriage, and it's among the michsholim, among the stumbling blocks that we can have out of this. So all of this comes up. He's writing this in 81, he's saying he ratified it in 96, and here we are, 20 years after that, and these are all issues coming up down the road. And that's always a question, and people reject it. I've heard people over and over again say, oh, you're being too sensitive, you're thinking too far in the future, and that's not what's going to happen. We're just doing what we're doing now, and it doesn't work out that way. So the Ritz actually said, I once gave a psak halacha lemaise, meaning a case that happened. In a case like this, with a woman who got genetic material, got pregnant by another man, I said she had to get divorced from her husband, she had to take a get. Right? Meaning he treated it like she's had an affair. And in the cases of having an affair, the woman is not allowed to stay with her husband, and that's the way he held halachically. And in practice, I mean, this is not a theoretical discussion he's having. He ruled halachically in practice that this is what has to happen if she gets pregnant by another man. So now he says to this doctor that he's writing to, how can you trust these people? Right? If they think that it's okay, and we think it's not okay, and we can't oversee them because they're in a laboratory and they have this material in the laboratory, so they're gonna promise us, you say they're gonna certify it for us. How can you trust them, especially when we know that the only reason why they're doing things the way they're doing it now is because they're worried what the public will say? But if, as soon as the public stops paying attention, right? Meaning, in a lot of these situations, people have lives, right? So, topic comes up, it's not really relevant to me, but I have a moral issue with it. I'll talk about it. Maybe I'll arrange a few rallies and protests and we'll care about it. But 5 years down the road, if random woman X goes into a fertility clinic and gets treatment Y, and nobody's paying a lot of attention to it, then we won't know about it. And he says, and that's what happens. People are apathetic to these things. They don't spend their time worrying about these things over and over again because they have lives. They move on to live their lives. They don't want to be, I think people would say, we don't want to be those kinds of people who are so anal about this, right? So careful about this. But you're going to have, especially since these doctors are going to think to themselves, if they're doing a favor for the couple, they're going to think that it's the right thing to do. They're going to help a couple get a baby, and they're going to have the happiness of raising a child, and they won't see the halakhic niceties that are worrying the Tzitzit Eliezer and that are concerns, halakhic concerns. And therefore, he says, he doesn't see how we can sort of work with such people if we can't trust them that they're going to do these kinds of things. There are also other problems, he says. So, for example, there is a halachic issue, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, although it's very important to this, of what's called being motzi zera levatala. It is unacceptable. It's supposed to, a man is not supposed to produce semen except in the context of having relations with his wife. So, levatala means for no purpose, and having relations with his wife is a purpose. Even so, there's a lot of issues around this, and I don't want to get into this on our topic. But in the case of artificial insemination, what happens is the man produces semen, so that's zera. He produces zera. All that zera that he produces eventually goes into his wife. Now, there's a stop in the ordinary way. The ordinary way is they'd have relations, and it would happen in the course of the activity. Here, he'll produce it. The doctors will mix it up, or they'll do whatever they'll do with it, and then they'll inseminate it into her. But it's still true that all the material that he produces goes into her. So therefore, it's not considered zera levatala. But in artificial insemination, I'm sorry, in like test tube babies, so that's not true. They'll take pieces, they'll take some of that material, they'll use it to try to create a fertilization, to create conception, and then the rest of it, they don't need it. Right? They'll take some of it, use it, and the rest they don't need. And sometimes, not only will they don't need it, they're worried about, sometimes they'll use it for another woman. Right? They'll hold it around, and if she has a husband who can't produce, or who can't have children who's sterile, or she's a single woman, you know, in our days, she's a single woman, they have banked stuff to it, so that's all, and that would be also a problem, because he's producing children he doesn't know about, and this you have that problem as well. So that's a problem in test tube babies that doesn't come up in the case of artificial insemination, where any zera that's produced eventually goes into her rechem, into her womb, into her uterus, into her, and therefore, it's not motzad zera levatala. Not only that, but in cases of artificial insemination, the usual problem is the man's problem, because that's what we're trying to do. We take his material and we find a way to make it more productive, maybe more able to fertilize her. The reason why that's important is because if the man can't produce a baby on his own naturally anyway, then when he produces semen for this purpose, it's not really zera levatala, because that stuff that he produces couldn't, without this intervention of the doctors, produce the baby anyway. So there's your argument to be made that it's not zera levatala. But in cases of test tube babies, the general issue that requires, or that leads us to think that we need to do a test tube fertilization, is that she has a problem, meaning that he doesn't have an issue. It's that his material can't get through to fertilize her eggs because of blockages within her body. If that's true, then there's more of a question of when he produces the zera, isn't that levatala at the moment that he produces it? Meaning, in the first case, so we had two different arguments here, just to make sure we keep them. The first argument was that in the case of artificial insemination, all of his material is eventually used inside of her, and therefore it's okay. Now he's making a different argument. He's saying that in artificial insemination, the stuff that he produces at the time that he produces it isn't actually zera that could make a baby anyway, because that's why we're using artificial insemination, and therefore it's not a problem with zera levatala. But in the second case, if the issue is in the delivery, because this thing going on inside of her body that prevents delivery of it, and that's what we're getting around, then at the moment that he produces it, zera levatala, in that sense of, at the moment he's producing it, it's not being used for fertilizing baby. So that's another halakhic issue that he has a problem with. It's also not clear to him, he's spoken about it elsewhere in the Tzitz Eliezer, about whether or not the husband can fulfill his mitzvah period of Arivia of having children in this kind of situation. And he has a couple opinions about there. There are those who say that the lineage of the baby is whoever the sperm donor was, and that's fully like his son or child. So that would be good. That would be but there are those who say that that's only l'chumra in terms of who can marry whom, but it's not true in terms of the mitzvah period of Arivia. So if you have a man who, this is the way he has children, that halachically he has not fulfilled the mitzvah period of Arivia, he's not fulfilled the mitzvah of having children. And there are those who say that the sperm donor is not related halachically to this man, to the baby at all. The baby, I guess, would be related only to whoever the mother is, who the baby came out of, and the person who had relations with the mother to produce the baby. But other than that there wouldn't be a halachic father. So that's a set of halachic questions that come up, and therefore that make the idea of test tube babies less halachically valuable than it might originally seem, because at least in those terms, we're not sure what we have, and it creates all sorts of problems of relationship, who's related to whom, and who can marry whom, and who has children with whom, and things like that. He's also concerned that it's not being done in the way that in artificial insemination, at least it looks like in a lot of ways, the ordinary way of conception and the ordinary way of having a baby. You have material of the husband inserted into the woman. Usually it's done in a natural way, and here it's not, but it's fundamentally the same kind of a thing, whereas here it seems, whereas in test tube baby, it's not, and he's bothered by that idea of stepping outside of, moving outside of, ordinary nature, those kinds of things. And he's already heard of, tell of people who are saying, you know, one day we won't even need women to be pregnant anymore. They can just live their lives and be happy, and we won't need the women to be, to get pregnant anymore. And then you have things like designer babies. We're going to pick and choose the quality we want in our child, and therefore the child that's produced isn't really their child halakhically, not halakhically, but theoretically, meaning if we take a man's material and a woman's egg, and then we pick and choose which of those we want to use, it's not quite the same thing as being fully their child, because we've stepped into the process. So all of that are things that bother Stelezer. So these are some of the issues that he raises. I don't want to go on. I mean, there's a little bit more to the tshuva, but nothing significant. The whole point is that he's got a problem with the people that he's dealing with, because he's not sure he trusts them. He's got a problem with the whole underlying assumption of all this, that we can change nature in these ways, and we can just create nature the way we want it to be created and do things the way we want to do it, and where that's going to lead to, plus the halakhic issues of the difference between artificial insemination, which already has some problems, and the issues of test tube babies, which even more problems, there's of relationships and things like that. So those are some of the issues that come up with test tube babies, starting with the question of Pidyon HaBen that we saw for the 25th of Shvat in the Tzitz Eliezer. Have a great day.